welcome back. You're with Thrift News Radio. Well, in the second hour today, we've got quite a very intense hour lined up for you folks. I want to get back into talking about vaccines, and I want to really come at this with the perspective of trying to come to grips with the real root cause of many of the problems that we're seeing in the modern world. And I just want to briefly highlight, before I introduce my guest, I want to highlight my perspective on this. Certainly not someone with medical qualifications. I'm certainly not speaking to you as someone who's going to give you a technical expert opinion on this. But I believe that it's actually not necessary to have that to understand what is going on. And by that, I mean to understand health and ill health in the world, in modern societies and in developing societies. It is very, very clear that most of the health problems that aren't being adequately dealt with are to do with things like diet, hygiene, basic living conditions, poverty, and a lot of these factors affect people in developed countries too. I mean, people have serious problems with their diet and serious problems with overconsumption of medications in Western countries. And of course, in developing countries, there's all kinds of problems with basic nutrition, all kinds of problems with clean water and lifestyle, overcrowding, overpopulation. And these are the sort of problems that have been around on this planet for a very long time, and they're actually very well understood. But we have a problem in our world now whereby all of these problems are being addressed by a kind of a cartel, kind of a monopolistic cartel of drug industry and insurance-funded or government-funded medical health systems, which seek to provide magic bullets for everything in the forms of mostly drugs or vaccines. And they basically always offer this silver bullet solution whenever there's a problem that comes up. It's always, we're going to either develop a new drug for it or we're going to develop a new vaccine for it. And the problem there is that a lot of these problems cannot ever intrinsically be solved by that, because they're not caused by a lack of a vaccine. They're caused by all kinds of lifestyle and problems that are societal, that are creating the healthcare problems. So on that note, I would now like to introduce my very esteemed guest, Dr. Vera Scheibner, who has a long history of vaccine research in Australia. And she has a doctorate in natural sciences from Bratislava in the former Czechoslovakia. And she studied natural sciences and specialised in micropaleontology. In Australia, she developed with her husband a breathing monitor for babies, which was named Cotwatch, branded as Cotwatch. Monitored babies had alarms after vaccination indicating biological stress. This was actually part of a study that was done to find out the type of stresses that were being induced in babies after vaccines, and they discovered quite a lot, as we'll learn today. So on that note, let me now welcome to the show Vera Scheibner. Are you there?
My pleasure.
A very great pleasure to have you today on the show, Dr. Scheibner. Can I just get you briefly to comment on my introduction? Because I think it's very important that we understand this from a holistic perspective, because I know there's a lot of very detailed information that you've got. But can you give us your broad perspective on some of those points I was raising there in my introduction?
Certainly. Perhaps I will start with myself.
Yes.
In 4 months, I'm turning 80.
Thank you.
I have no pains and aches. The doctors don't see me as a patient, only when I come to tell them how bad they are.
Yeah.
And it is because I live normal, natural, simple life. And I make sure that I have adequate levels of vitamin C. Because based on my, many years of research, I realized that the biggest scourge of humanity is subclinical scurvy, deficiency of vitamin C. If we picked fruit ripe from the tree and ate it straight away, we would get several grams of vitamin C. But when fruit comes from a cold store, well, only God Almighty knows how much or how little vitamin C in such fruit. So I decided in 1985, when I realized that antibiotics are not helping my took large doses of vitamin C, and I haven't had tonsillitis since. So one doesn't actually have to be super natural, super organic, but human species is an omnivorous animal, so we have to have great variety of foods and mainly vegetables and fruit. So about 90% of my intake of food are vegetables, and only about or less 10% is meat and some other animal proteins. And I can see it on my own health that I don't suffer any flu, any colds, any coughs. I have no pains and aches. I used Medicare system only about 20 times in its whole existence, and 8 times because the radiologist couldn't see 2 obvious fractured ribs. So I had an accident and I needed x-rays. The radiographers were great. They really took good pictures. You really could see the 2 broken ribs. And the radiologist wrote no lesion.
Right.
And so I asked him to show me a textbook of anatomy and show me a healthy rib. He did. And, of course, those healthy ribs had none of those fractures that were on my ribs. And he still insisted that I have no lesion. So I had to use Medicare 4 times because I had to go. I went back to the same radiologist. I had new x-rays done, and he still insisted there are no lesions. Then I went to 3 others, and it was the 4th one who simply wrote 2 healing fractures. So it cost the Medicare much more because of ignorance and ignorance breeding stupidity. How else can I say? So if everybody just led a normal, healthy life with making sure that they have good vitamin C status, Medicare would not be overloaded as it is now. It would be able to afford to treat everybody free. Hospitals would be empty, or they would be just one-story buildings. I mean, it's not a sign of progress to have more and more hospitals,
yeah,
like skyscrapers full of sick people. That's not a success of the medical system. So there is something terribly wrong here.
Yes, and your story there really illustrates this this reflex reaction of prescribing a drug, in the case of antibiotics, when really the problem was simply that you had a fracture. But this seems to be endemic in our system, but it's also part of the economic system which underpins modern medicine, isn't it?
Well, modern medicine is commercialized.
Yeah.
It is a big business, and it is a growing business because it's all about money, money, money. It should be a diminishing industry,
yeah,
not a growing industry.
Yeah.
So the basic, the substance of the medical system is wrong. Otherwise, I also have to say that about one-third of medical research is very good because, as you mentioned, my introduction into the world of vaccines happened through a breathing monitor, CotWatch. Yes, babies had alarms and indicating stress, and invariably they had alarms after vaccination. Mm. And so I had it straight for medical libraries. Where else? Go to the horse's mouth. And to this day, I collected more than 200,000 of pages of medical papers. I had to extend my house by 100 square meters just to house that library. It's a national treasure. And everything you ought to know, that vaccines do not prevent diseases and cannot prevent diseases, but very fact that if you inject bacteria, viruses, and other microorganisms straight into the bloodstream, you are bypassing the normal portals of entry, nose, and mouth, and you don't develop immunity, you actually develop anaphylaxis, a harmful immune response opposite to prophylaxis. So anaphylaxis actually makes you more susceptible to the targeted disease and also related and unrelated bacterial infections. And this is all published in good orthodox medical research, particularly the second half of the 20th century. In 1950s, 60s, 70s, medical research was just brilliant. Then things started hotting up because the pharma industry got hold of medicine, and its medicine became just administering medication, pharmaceutical products. And those pharmaceutical products are toxic. They cause reactions. They kill people, just like vaccines are toxic and they kill people. So they had to start lying about it. And this is freely admitted. British Medical Journal, God bless them, recently published an example of wrong research where leprosy was pronounced eradicated. Well, it was not eradicated at all, but they just excluded most of the people who had leprosy from calculations of the safety and effectiveness, and came up with a result that they now eradicated leprosy, and they haven't at all. And it is all published in British Medical Journal. And so one after another, vaccination, for instance, mass vaccination started with the polio vaccine in the mid-50s. And already during the trial of the first injectable Salk polio vaccines in the United States on 1,500 American children, within days they had an outbreak of paralysis in the vaccinated children. And so what did they do? They didn't say, oh, well, this doesn't work, so let's move on and forget about it and look for better treatments or solutions. No, they started redefining poliomyelitis. So a original definition of polio, a disease in which paralysis resolves within 60 days, changed into a disease with paralysis which persists for more than 60 days. Well, only about 1 or 2% of the cases of paralysis persist for more than 60 days. So they magically eradicated over 90% of cases of poliomyelitis as poliomyelitis. And they started giving it different names, like ascending paralysis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, and all sorts of other names, and bingo, poliomyelitis disappeared. They also started excluding vaccinated children, children who develop paralysis after polio vaccination, after the first dose of polio vaccine. They were proclaimed as unvaccinated because they said that you need three injections to be fully vaccinated. Yes, but then they also published, the other good medical research published, that most cases of vaccine-caused poliomyelitis happen after the first vaccine.
Right.
So, and this is all published in The Lancet. They even published things, I mean, one doesn't have to be a rocket scientist. For instance, in Namibia, there was a vaccination, polio vaccination, in the South Health region, and no vaccination in the North Health region, because in the North there was a war. Now, straight after vaccination...
Dr. Scheiber, sorry to interrupt. We're just going to break. We're just going to break you with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to my guest, Dr. Vera Scheibner. Very, very interesting discussion today, folks. We will be right back. Don't go away. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Harewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And my guest today is Dr. Vera Scheibner, who is an expert in many of the issues around vaccines, problems, reactions, and she has studied it and developed some unique technology that can actually monitor the breathing of babies. Now, Dr. Scheiber, just in the last segment then, perhaps you'd like to finish off. You were talking about the vaccines for polio and some things that developed in Africa. So please continue.
Namibia.
Yep.
So Namibia is divided into two health regions, North Health Region and South Health Region. There was intense mass vaccination, polio vaccination in the South Health Region, which was immediately followed an outbreak of paralysis in the vaccinated. And then this was published in The Lancet, and then the authors wrote, there was no vaccination in the North Health Region and no epidemic because the natural wild polio virus was freely operating in the North Health Region, and children developed natural immunity without developing paralysis. Now, wow, you can't have it clearer than this, what happened here. That they even added that because in the South Health Region, the polio vaccine, only the vaccine polioviruses were circulating, it prevented the children from developing natural immunity. Wow.
Yes.
And this is Lancet. And this happened in all countries in the United States. Very instructive is the example of Romania, where they were really concerned about how many polio-vaccinated children actually developed poliomyelitis. And they thought that it was because they used the local Romanian polio vaccine. So they purchased, they called it a polio vaccine produced in Western countries. They didn't want to name a country. But then they had the same number of polio-caused paralysis when they used this vaccine produced in a Western country.
Yes.
Now, what was the difference? Well, Romanians were more honest about admitting what was happening, while the Western country they didn't want to name was just dishonest and didn't declare the full number of children who developed paralysis from the vaccine.
Extraordinary.
And so I can go on and on and on and on. But, you know, if it wasn't so tragic, it would be funny.
Indeed. Dr. Scheibner, your colleague, Bronwyn Hancock, has been on my show a few times, and she stated in a show a couple of years ago that major polio epidemics were unknown before the 20th century. Localized paralytic polio epidemics began to occur in Europe and the United States around 1900. I don't think a lot of people realize that polio is actually a modern phenomenon.
Well, the correct information is actually that in Europe, the first outbreaks of paralysis, poliomyelitis, paralysis, occurred after the smallpox vaccine. So it was in 17 and 1800s.
Yes.
Historically, they found mummies with withered limbs, particularly mummies of children, in the old Egypt. Because then they used variolation. That was a very crude smallpox vaccination that they just took.
Yes.
Scabs from people who had smallpox. They pulverized them, added water, and then they scratched the skin on the arm and pressed this mixture into the scratches. So, yes, it is true. Until smallpox vaccination, there were no outbreaks of poliomyelitis in the old world.
Indeed.
And also one has to realize that poliomyelitis was called a provocation paralysis caused by other vaccines, such as smallpox and then typhoid and diphtheria and other vaccines. Actually, all vaccines cause paralysis, and it is called Guillain-Barré syndrome, ascending paralysis. But
right.
All vaccines cause paralysis because reactions to all vaccines are not specific to any one vaccine. They are subject, reactions to any injected toxic substances are subject to this non-specific stress syndrome, meaning that all diseases initially have the same symptoms, and also there is a limited repertory of reactions, of symptoms. So when you read product inserts for pharmaceutical products and vaccines, they list the same, very numerous, by the way, organ by organ, the same reactions to all vaccines. And then hypocritically, some pro-vaccinators, particularly one American pro-vaccinator, started saying, show me a specific reaction to pertussis vaccine. Well, there is no specific reaction to pertussis vaccine because it is the same reaction then as to any other vaccines.
Right.
So that also shows me they know very well that what's happening, they just don't want to admit it openly. It's probably the biggest perpetuated mass lie in the history of humanity. You know, when, for instance, a child develops reaction to vaccination or dies, and it is the same reactions. It would be subdural and retinal hemorrhages, and it would be hemorrhaging into the organs and at the bottom of hair on the scalp, and some other other similar reactions. They say that either it is only coincidental. Right, so tens of thousands of cases is coincidental, right? Yes. If it was one, fine, but tens of thousands of cases all over the world, or that the parents caused it, shaken baby syndrome.
Yes, yes.
It started in 1950s and 60s in Salt Lake City, Utah, where a radiologist, pediatric radiologist, who had no formal training on radiology, misinterpreted the signs of scurvy and started accusing parents of causing these hemorrhages and these symptoms. And, you know, we are very critical of the court system, for instance, which found the three journalists, one of them Australian, guilty in Egypt. Our courts are very much the same because they are sentencing parents of children who were injured or died from vaccination on the basis of no evidence. Because, again, there is plenty of medical papers who link these typical hemorrhages of the so-called shaken baby syndrome to scurvy. When you inject vaccines, they are toxic and they cause acute scurvy. And scurvy used to be called a hemorrhagic disease. And that's why those vaccine victims, the vaccine recipients who develop scurvy, they have these bizarre hemorrhages. And, you know, the hemorrhage around the base of the hair on the scalp. Yeah. And they are philosophizing how the parents were individually pulling hair from their children's scalp. I mean, this is bizarre. This is this is unacceptable in the 21st century. It's shocking. And these are the parents who are compliant, without questioning, go and allow their children to be vaccinated and end up in prison. I mean, these shaken baby syndrome are destroying families. They are destroying people's lives. And prisons are full of innocent fathers, mostly, who are there. Many of them don't even know what on earth happened to their babies.
There have been cases I've heard of babies having cracked bones or actual injury
absolutely.
To the bones.
Absolutely.
Is this caused
absolutely.
By the same problem? Is this the same
absolutely.
Condition?
Absolutely. Actually, I publish a lot in BritishMedicalJournal.com.
Yeah.
So I published an article on this because the same ignorant radiologist in Salt Lake City, Utah, he misinterpreted bizarre scurvy fractures. They are not normal fractures. Mm. Bizarre scurvy fractures as fractures caused by trauma.
Yeah.
And he just was accusing parents left, right, and center. And these are actually described in good medical papers as typical scurvy fractures. And, you know, ignorance. Once when I was interviewed, I was asked, are you saying that you know more about vaccines than a GP? And I said, yes, absolutely. And
yes.
Many of doctors are so ignorant that it is embarrassing.
And of course, the GPs generally just take the information that they get from the pharmaceutical industry, and most of them don't even question it. We are going to break here with Truth News Radio Australia. Talking to Dr. Vera Schreibner. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Dr. Scheidner, getting back to the point about how professionals are basically failing in their duty. This is a huge problem, isn't it? And I know that there are some doctors out there who really do try very hard and dedicate their lives to trying to help their patients. But there seems to be an awful lot who are in that industry, probably who shouldn't even be there, that just aren't. They aren't really doing their own research. They aren't looking at problems through their own eyes and thinking about it. They're simply being given packaged solutions that come usually in the form of brochures and maybe with the odd, free holiday somewhere to go to a conference. And I've spoken to people like this and I've really been quite shocked at the fact that they don't do any real research. They just let other people tell them what the latest research is.
The tragedy is that it is actually the drug companies who reveal in full reactions to their products. Because when one only has to read product inserts for all pharmaceuticals, including vaccines, and they list the same things that I'm talking about, autism. You know, I am looking at the product insert for diphtheria and tetanus toxoid and acellular pertussis vaccine at SOAP, Tripedia, Sanofi Pasteur, and on page 11, they list autism as one of the serious reactions observed in a post-marketing survey. They list autism there.
Right.
And product inserts for MMR vaccines list gastrointestinal problems exactly the same that are observed in autistic children.
So that's extraordinary, really. That's in the insert. I mean, this is what Andrew Wakefield was disqualified from practicing medicine for pointing out in a medical paper. He was banned from practicing medicine, and you're saying this is now actually in the inserts.
Absolutely, and I can say it because it's in the public domain. Catalyst a few months ago had a program on Kawasaki disease. And they interviewed experts who were saying that it's an unknown bacterium which spreads via weather lines and currents and things. And I printed off the internet several product inserts for several vaccines which list Kawasaki disease as one of the reactions to that vaccine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I hope they realized that they just have to read a very accessible basic information. But how embarrassing. You see, another thing, when I went to school in former Czechoslovakia, that was during the communist regime, right? But people there have a long history of all sorts of problems, you know, they were under Hungarians for 1,000 years and then under Germans and then under Russians. So people simply exercised a very effective civil disobedience, and part of it was good education. And they were telling us all the time, we are only teaching you to learn. If you stop learning, you are going backwards. And so by the time you finish this study, everything we taught you will be obsolete. And I studied all the time. I was actually a student, constantly my hand up and correcting the teachers.
Yeah.
Sometimes I actually wonder where on earth did I get all that knowledge from, because there was no internet and it was much harder to get information. But nevertheless, we were encouraged to constantly study. I don't think that they teach that type of positive attitude in Australian schools. When I came to Australia in 1969, you know, I was helping PhD students who were simply bullied by their PhD fathers or mothers, as they called it here, and didn't help them at all.
Yes.
And so I was helping them free of charge because they sometimes came crying because they were so desperate. When I visited one, I'm not naming anybody, one micropaleontologist, he's dead now, his oculars were so dirty on his microscope that I asked him for soap and water to wash it. Now, he couldn't see very much through dirty oculus, could he?
Yes.
Also, I did all my technical work myself because the technical assistant, he was giving me samples empty, because he had no idea what to do and he had no interest in that work. So I did from the preparation of samples, so picking up the fossils and everything, I did myself. And I had results. Phenomenal results, actually.
I'm very interested, Dr. Scheibner, to understand what the latest, you know, phase in our understanding of the problems caused by vaccines. As you said, anaphylaxis, and we see a certain range of conditions, among which is autism spectrum disorder, which is a very loosely defined set of conditions, isn't it? But it actually also includes things like intestinal infections. And I found it very interesting what you were saying that earlier, that the in the early 20th century, polio was possibly a reaction to vaccines as well. Can you sort of explain what's happening, what's been happening over time? I mean, obviously vaccines have been changing over time. We don't see polio anymore, but we do see Guillain-Barré syndrome. I mean, is it really just that they're changing the names of things, or are different conditions now becoming manifest due to different additives and various things going into the vaccines?
Exactly. For instance, in India, they proclaimed eradication of the indigenous poliomyelitis, yes, but they have 42,000 cases a year of vaccine-associated paralytic poliomyelitis. Right. They even have the name for it.
Yeah.
So they simply call it a different name. And so 42,000 cases a year is a hell of a lot of poliomyelitis. Actually, the incidence of all so-called vaccine preventable diseases has increased manifold. For instance, in the United States, mass vaccination started in the mid-70s, and straight after, the individual states gradually mandated DPT and polio vaccination, the incidence of whooping cough went up 300%. And this is published, this graph, where you see the incidence of poliomyelitis going down. Yeah. There comes the mid-70s, and it makes sharp upswing upwards. And you can see this with all diseases. With measles, there is an interesting situation, because measles vaccination in the United States started in 1963, and they claim major success with measles vaccination. Yes, but when we have a look at measles in the Amish, a religious group which lives right across the United States, the Amish claim a religious exemption to vaccination. The Amish had not reported a single case of measles for 18 years between 1963 and then 18 years later. And they didn't vaccinate, while at the same time, the non-Amish communities, well-vaccinated non-Amish communities, still reported 2-3 year regular epidemics of measles, but the incidence was a little bit lower. In other words, the best evidence that a vaccine actually kept measles alive and kicking, because there you have the correct control group, the unvaccinated Amish. Yes. But then what happened with all vaccine, so-called vaccine-preventable diseases, you see, the viruses and bacteria in those vaccines are modified. They are not natural live viruses. They are modified. But they also had effect on the natural viruses, and they started changing. And even the modified vaccine viruses started changing to evade the effect of vaccines, just exactly what happened with antibiotics. Because, you see, these little critters are a superior intelligence, and they immediately develop immunity resistance to medication and vaccines. But those new modified viruses and bacteria are much more virulent than the natural viruses and bacteria. That's why those diseases.
We are just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We will be right back talking to my guest, Dr. Vera Schreiden. Don't go. Very important show. Radio, and I'm talking to Dr. Vera Scheibner. Now, we've been really getting into some fascinating topics. Would you like to just continue your thought there before you were so rudely cut off, Dr. Scheibner?
Okay, no problem. So let's go back to measles. So with vaccination, an especially vicious form of measles occurred, very high mortality, and it was direct consequence of vaccination. It was actually a good illustration how injecting these measles vaccines actually suppressed the immune system and modified the immune response, atypical measles.
Yes.
So when you hear that a child died from measles, that was very likely atypical measles. But another undesirable effect of vaccines was damage to the transplacentally transmitted immunity. Mothers who had measles as children, they have this transplacentally transmitted immunity. It's a temporary immunity which makes sure that little babies up to a year or two do not get any infectious diseases. But now babies only a few days old are developing whooping cough and measles. And, of course, then there is a big problem. Medical Journal of Australia published an article which actually was supposed to show deaths of babies from pertussis, from whooping cough. Well, when you read the article and analyze it, you realize that those babies, all of them got whooping cough from their fully vaccinated mothers and siblings who suffered whooping cough at the time of their birth. But they didn't die from whooping cough because they were doing well until they were admitted in hospitals and put on antibiotics. Not one, but two intravenous second-generation broad-spectrum antibiotics. And because they were given antibiotics on different days after admission,
yeah,
you could see how they started deteriorating either one day, 2 days, or even 5 days after the admission, because it depended on when they were put on those antibiotics. So those babies actually died from antibiotics and not from whooping cough. They would have been better not being given anything. Yeah, I remember actually in the 50s when they started running around with antibiotics, people were dropping dead like flies from them,
yeah,
particularly when they were injected with antibiotics.
Yes.
And this is, of course, described in medical papers, and I seem to be the only one who reads it. When I had to go to medical libraries, because, mind you, I started this research before we had the internet and before we even had personal computers, PCs, so I had to go to medical libraries, etc. You know, I was often the only one in the library. I was actually their best client. They asked me to contribute to a birthday present of one of the employees. And I gave them $5, my last $5, okay? So who reads it? I seem to be the only one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can assure you that medical doctors do not read medical literature, and they should. And they may be very busy. They usually say, I'm so busy, I haven't got the time. But boy, oh boy, isn't it part of their professional expertise to know this?
Well, if they're not studying and they're not really studying and applying what they've learned from their work, then they're not really acting in a highly professional capacity. You know,
of course,
and we shouldn't be putting our trust in them. And this is the main thing that I take from it. And I don't put trust in doctors. And I try to tell anyone that I meet to understand that doctors are mostly functionaries, and they're quite highly paid, but increasingly these days they're not even that highly paid anymore. I mean, doctors are becoming more and more just functionaries. The people who are making the money are the executives who run the pharmaceutical companies and like the salespeople, and they're making massive amounts of money. And everyone else is really just serving that industry. I mean, the doctors need to become part of the activism that you've been advocating. And this is something, Dr. Scheibner, that affects people across the spectrum of so many topics we talk about on this show, is that people will not jeopardize their lifestyle. And I've heard anecdotally that many doctors, privately, they will tell you that they don't think your children should have certain vaccines, but publicly they will never advocate that. They don't want to be quoted on it. However, with their own children, quite often they won't give them the vaccines.
Well, when we had the cot watch, you know, when you have a monitor, you can see the doctors. We saw pediatricians and GPs and cot test researchers, etc. And, you know, we are in the office and there are these photographs of four beautiful children. And I commented, oh, lovely children. And then I said, do they suffer asthma? No. Do they suffer any other problems? No. Did you vaccinate them? No. Oh, yes, I had them done later. And I just looked and said, my foot. And we all laughed. Yes, it is even published in medical papers that doctors, many doctors don't vaccinate their own children. Some doctors do, of course, but many don't. Even Mr. Abbott, it's on the internet. You can have a look at it.
Yes.
He didn't give HPV vaccine to his own daughters.
That's fascinating.
And he wrote to the effect that he didn't trust the vaccine.
The Prime Minister of Australia did not vaccinate. He's got three daughters, I believe.
So
he did not vaccinate his own daughters. That's fascinating.
That's right. But then he said, when they were, of course, too old to be vaccinated probably, he said, but then I started trusting the HPV vaccine, and now I think that all girls have to get it. But excuse moi.
I see. Now that his daughters are safe and they don't need it, he's willing to advocate it. Again, that is an extremely disappointing behavior, isn't it?
I reminded him of it.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's true. It's in the public domain. And, you know, he was right not to give it to his daughters. Yes. I am not saying that he should. But then he should have protected all the other daughters of other parents.
Indeed.
And say, don't vaccinate it because I don't trust it either.
So just like everyone else, Tony Abbott doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. He doesn't want to step on any toes. And he made that public statement probably on recommendation, because I know that they all have PR advisors. And I know that anything you say that upsets the pharmaceutical industry puts you into very, very deep water as a politician. So he was probably advised to make that statement to clear himself.
You know, once I had a seminar at Sydney University, and I asked the organizers to invite a big wig from a drug company, and they did, and he came. He even came, shook hands, and he said, look, if I leave early, it doesn't mean that I'm not interested. Actually, he stayed until the end, and then he says, is this what we do to babies? And I said, yes. And he says, we better invite you to give us a talk, right?
Really?
But that never happened. You see, no, I actually am not encountering any hostility. I only had about five psycho emails, and my response was, dear David, change name, please keep emailing me, you write very interestingly. And I never heard from him. You know, they want you to squirm and cry and commit suicide. No, I encourage them to email me more because it's so interesting, right?
Yes.
And I get rid of them that way. But anyway, what were we talking about?
Well, just to finish off, we've only got a few minutes left. Let's briefly address the kind of really human rights, civil liberties issue of compulsory vaccinations, which are continually being injected into public discussion, quite often by the media themselves. Quite often it's the mainstream media that suggests that maybe we need to make vaccination compulsory, and then they get all this debate going, which really wouldn't have existed if they hadn't provoked it. And you were part of a television debate, I believe, a couple of years ago, which is on your website, and I think I might have talked about it on my show a bit. What was the fallout for that from you, and has there been any more developments on that? This was featured in the 60 Minutes episode.
Yeah. Now, I'll try to say it quickly. Dr. Woodrich went on television years ago and said, parents, I will force you to vaccinate, to immunize. Yes. And then he came back 3 days later. Actually, legal advice was that I can't do it, but I will force you other ways. And so he introduced this condition for getting some baby payments to be fully vaccinated.
Yes.
However, you see, Australian Constitution expressly doesn't allow any medical procedure to be mandated.
Yes.
So whenever you read any material, it emphasizes vaccination is not mandatory in Australia. And if you have a look at Avant, which is the medical insurer, they explain correctly that actually this claim, when parents claim conscientious objection, the GP only signs that he counseled the parent about the pros and cons of vaccination,
yes.
Not that he agrees with their decision to vaccinate. But because I read medical literature and medical weeklies, many GPs actually misinterpret it and they say, I will refuse to sign it, etc., because they don't even read the instructions and the correct situation.
Yes.
So
they're not required to agree
because it's the parent's decision, not the doctor's decision.
Yes, and it's only the doctor's obligation to give them the medical information that he has, and of course they don't have the power to prevent parents from vaccinating. There are no powers as such to compel parents to vaccinate their children.
Absolutely, especially since they don't accept any responsibility. Because if something happens, you know, they jump on the parents. And it is actually dangerous when you have a child that is reacting to vaccination to even take it to hospital, because they will immediately accuse the parents of shaken baby syndrome.
Yes.
They call the police and the child protection agencies and things, and they haven't even done any tests. This is a very, very bad situation.
And of course,
you see, the government can provide medical and hospital services, but they cannot have a national vaccination program. It is actually unconstitutional and illegal. So they are that's ultra vires when they even advertise or encourage people to have their children vaccinated. It's unconstitutional and illegal.
Except there have been cases, and we don't have time, we've run out of time, but there have been cases where the Department of Community Services has threatened to remove children from custody for non-vaccination. Maybe this is something we'll take up on another show. Dr. Scheibner, thank you so much for coming on today. It has really been fantastic talking to you.
Thank you very much. I saw you on Drum. I know who you are. Wonderful, wonderful. And by the way, they actually take away the children.
They do. Well, unfortunately, we have to go. We're with Truth News Radio Australia. We will be back next week. See you then, folks.